Well, as they said, it's not over until the Mockingjay sings.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast bringing you all the reviews and opinions and explainers over every book talk famous book that everyone is convincing you is an absolute must read. And we're going to tell you if that's really true. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. And we have an exciting one for you because it is extremely relevant right now. The movie adaptation of this just came out, and that is The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes by Suzanne Collins, which is the Hunger Games trilogy's prequel. So if you're alive, you've probably read The Hunger Games or seen the movies. It's like, you know, super popular. Everybody knows it. So a little lesser known is this prequel, and it is from the perspective of
Coriolanus
Snow, who is the president during the Hunger Games trilogy and is essentially Katniss's like enemy. He's a really, really bad dude, and he is the reason for the Hunger Games. But the prequel is his point of view and kind of like how he became what he became. And basically the premise is he is in school and his family is kind of on hard times, and he has this opportunity to during the 10th Hunger Games to mentor a tribute. Him and his classmates each get a tribute. So he ends up with a girl from District 12 named Lucy Gray. And it kind of goes through the ups and downs, like the moral tugging back and forth of war and punishment and human nature and, you know, also violent Hunger Games type stuff. But little less actiony than the actual trilogy, but it's an interesting look at how you get to where you are in the original trilogy.
Do you guys have your reviews?
Casey, why don't you go first since you have... Oh, okay.
Well, I'll just go first and then segue into Casey. How does that sound? Because I have a Goodreads review from someone named Casey on Goodreads.
And
it's a 3-star review. And she said, how did she manage to make a book about a murder contest so boring? So Casey, what are your reviews?
Contest.
Yeah, I mean, one of my complaints is that it's not more about a murder contest, but so that exposes my opinion a little bit, but I found some 1-star reviews. One is a 1-star that says, I pretend I do not see it. The second says, tempted to make a rant review to monetize the 16 hours I lost to this book.
Okay. Well, we covered the middle and the bottom, so I'll cover the top. Here is a 4.75 star on StoryGraph. Only reason that this isn't a 5 stars is because of my hatred for Snow. And then a 4-star review that says, Snow is an a-hole.
Yeah.
Facts.
That's the point.
Well, overall, Goodreads users say 3.9 out of 5. Amazon users say 4.6 out of 5. Do tell us what you feel, even though we already know Casey's rating.
Sorry.
Yeah. I don't know. Should I go first just because we've like exposed it a little bit already?
Yeah. Go in depth.
Okay, rant city. So I mean, I already said it. I thought this book was really boring, and I feel like this is now my second most disappointing read of the year. I felt like the book I had hoped for was like a lot better than the book that it delivered. And if I had to summarize this book, I would say it's like reading a book about someone sitting on their couch watching the Super Bowl instead of reading a book about someone actually playing in the Super Bowl. I thought that the characters were really one-dimensional. I hated Snow. I thought he was so flat, and I thought it was a really missed opportunity to make a really complicated hero to villain arc. Because he was really a villain the whole time. He was a psychopath from day one. He doesn't change at all. I thought it was so boring. And I didn't think the romance was believable. And literally the only reason this isn't a one-star read for me is because it sets up the series really well. And I did think it was really interesting to watch how like this era informed Katniss's era and kind of how Snow's life made Katniss like such an antagonistic hero for him. And that was the only thing that I found interesting, but I really hated it. And I'm sorry, but I'm going to shit on it this entire episode.
Oh, wow.
I think Catherine and I were both in like physical pain while she was talking.
No.
It does hurt me. That hurt me.
I'm sorry. It's really a well-liked book. So I really do feel, you know.
Second worst book you've read this year. Oh my God.
That puts it right above A Little Life. That's really upsetting.
I didn't say worst. I said most disappointing.
Oh, so that puts it right behind Ashes and the Star-Cursed King, which is just as bad.
Indeed.
Oh, how well do we know each other? That's ugh.
Yeah.
Okay. Abrupt shift. I read this when it came out in 2020. I think I'm the only one who read it right when it came out a couple years ago, before we knew it was going to be a movie, but it was pretty immediately picked up for a movie. I give this 5 stars, and here's why I think this is hilarious. Casey is the character development girly who loves when nothing's happening, and I hate when there is no action. We are flipped on this. I think the character development of Snow in this book is amazing. I kept telling people, read this book, it's better than the original trilogy.
Yeah, that's why I was so shocked when I saw your rating. I was like, wow, I did not see that coming.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I had to go back and refresh myself today, but in the moment, I was like, well, you're not supposed to like Snow. You get tempted to at points, but you know what he becomes. So you're reading it the whole time knowing what he becomes. And it's just this really interesting discussion of morality, human nature, and all the things that can go wrong in war. And I don't know how you didn't find that a really good writing about that. So I don't know what to tell you. I'm sorry I hyped it up for you.
I thought the character development was so bad.
Oh my God.
I know. I'm sorry.
Wow. You always guys ask me to take a side in things, and I'm going to take a side, and I side with Caitlin.
I know you do.
Here's the thing, though. I'm going to be totally honest. I am extremely biased in this review because The Hunger Games is the reason why I started reading, like, period, started reading. I hated reading up until reading The Hunger Games in sixth grade. Like, I would not.
You obviously weren't a Warriors girly then.
No, I was not. I tried reading The Warriors and it did not interest me.
Like, there's something we can agree on.
I was so not interested in reading. There was no good books for me to read. Every time I tried to read, I would read for, I know Casey's going to relate to this, the Blue Bonnet book challenge in Texas, where you had to read a certain number of books in order to get like a Barnes & Noble field trip gift card to get free books. I did that, but it was so begrudgingly that I don't remember any of the books I read for that. So The Hunger Games is why I started reading. So if I'm being honest, it's probably closer to a 4 or a 4.5 star rating, but because it is The Hunger Games, and I think this book is the best in the series, so I'll agree with Caitlin on that because I think it sets up everything. And Casey's like putting her head in her hand and shaking her head at that. I think it sets up Snow so well because we don't get his perspective in The Hunger Games. And I think he's more developed than Katniss is, honestly, in this book from the 3-book trilogy.
Okay, Katniss is such a one-dimensional character. I'm sorry.
I agree with that.
I actually agree that Katniss is one-dimensional, but That's why these books are like low-key a flop. Like if I had read them as an adult, I wouldn't have liked them. The
Oh my
interesting
God.
part is all the murder.
Now she's
Like
shitting on the actual series.
I
Oh
loved the
my
actual
God.
series.
We're gonna
I'm
get
not going to pretend
canceled.
I didn't love it, but I loved it because the world was so horrifying and rich. And I do think that Suzanne Collins is a really good writer. Like the world always feels really real to me, but I heavily critique the way she writes characters. I don't think that they're full people. And obviously, we disagree on this book, but
I'm so stressed by the direction this discussion
I
is
know
going.
we're like as
Okay.
diametrically opposed as we could possibly be on this book.
Okay, let's just plot or character driven.
Character.
Yeah, I'll give you character. Catherine's making a face, but like Snow is making the decisions and
Yeah. It's definitely character driven, but I'm so curious because Casey's saying that there was no character development, but saying is character
that's
driven.
why it was bad, because the character development was so not there and boring, but it was supposed to be the book. Like you're
Well,
reading
Catherine, you
the
walked us into that one.
Yeah.
I know, but I had to ask because I was confused.
It was, I would personally argue, obviously, feel free to disagree.
Clearly.
Obviously. That the full whole literally, I did not find a single moment interesting until the very end of the book when there's this really intense scene between two of the main characters. And that scene, I was like, this is divine. Every other scene, I was like, flip, 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 skim. But there's almost no plot in the whole book. So it's obviously supposed to be character development. I just didn't think that it was, worth reading.
Oh my God. All right. Well, we're just gonna
I'm
move
kind of taking
on.
a piss. I'm just being mean, but yeah.
Have you read other books by the author? Obviously, we have all read the Hunger Games trilogy.
And
She's
Casey, you've read
written other
more of them.
books.
I've read the Gregor the Overlander series, which is still my favorite Suzanne Collins work. It's something I also read when I was a child, so I don't have like a super clear like adult perspective on it, but when I was a kid, I really loved her Gregor the Overlander series.
There you go. I guess if you're Team Casey, go read that one instead when we get to the end. I don't know.
The reason I say I was a child when I read it is because I don't want people to be like, that book series was so bad. And I'll be like, look, I liked it when I was in fourth grade.
How was the pacing of this book and how long did it take you to read? I'm gonna just sit this one out because I read it in, according to Goodreads, May 2020. So obviously I had plenty of time on my hands and I don't remember how long it took. That was too long ago. So
The pacing for me in this book was a huge part of the struggle. I took forever to read it. I don't know exactly when I started it, but every time I put it down, I wanted to just not pick it back up again, and I wouldn't have finished it if it wasn't for this podcast.
wow. Ah,
I
jeez. I will say it took me longer than I thought it did. I took about 5 days to read it. And
That's a year for Catherine. Oh my
I
God.
know. I looked at my Goodreads and I was shocked by myself, where I started it on like a Saturday and finished it on a Thursday, and I was shocked with myself. So actually, yeah, it took me a minute to finish reading. Which, granted, if you're a normal human being, that sounds normal 5 days. But for me, I can, if I'm super invested in a book, I can read it in a day.
So
So.
here, I guess comparatively, it is longer than the books in the trilogy, and it is slower paced than the books in the trilogy.
Yeah.
If that is a helpful reference, other than our opinions.
I think that is helpful because it is,
I do
I
too.
feel
That's a
like
good way
it's
to say
even
it.
more complex and adult than the original trilogy, which makes sense for the author.
Yeah, I do feel like it's written n to capture like the audience who was like reading YA when The Hunger Games was out. So I actually don't think that this book is necessarily written for a YA audience. I think it's actually written for adults.
So there's, I want to bring up it kind of segues us into the next question. So the movie came out shortly before we're recording this. Actually, it's probably been a couple weeks now, but I saw this TikTok of a woman around our age, you know, mid to late 20s, was like, I went to see the Hunger Games movie, the midnight premiere, and where are all the preteens? Like, when I was a preteen, I was at every midnight premiere with my hair braided like Katniss. And I was like, oh my god, we're old. Because I definitely went to the midnight premiere of One of the Mockingjays in college with my friends.
Yeah, I went to the opening day for sure.
But I have not yet seen the movie. I wanted to kind of wait until this episode because I didn't want my opinions to be tainted by the film adaption. However, I will be seeing it.
Will you be seeing it in movie theaters, or are you going to wait till it's on like demand?
That's a tricky one just based off my personal schedule and it being holiday season. Is the first movie in a long time I've been tempted to go to the theaters to see.
Because I'm going to go see it in the movie theaters either tomorrow or the next day.
I would like to see it in theaters. I don't know if I'll manage to make it, but I don't love going to the movies. It's one of my weird post-COVID icks, and I'm highly considering.
Yeah, that's fair. I will probably not go see it.
Okay.
I love Rachel Ziegler, so
I did not, but that doesn't affect it.
Wait, hold on. Do I know who Rachel Ziegler is?
Ziegler.
Maybe it's Ziegler. Sorry.
She's a good singer.
Just kidding.
She's a good singer.
She was in West Side Story. She's about to be Belle.
No, she's about to be Snow White.
Oh, that one.
Get it straight, Caitlin.
Sorry. How dare I besmirch Emma Watson?
Yeah, I've never seen anything with her in it, actually.
I think she's funny. That's my main thing.
Okay. Well, anyway, you guys want to do Busy Girl reading?
Sure. I will go first.
Well, Casey's going to go last.
Yeah, let's be real. I'm going to then toss it to Caitlin. I'm going to give it a 4 or 3.5. Yeah, I don't think this is very well paced for a busy schedule, but at the same time, like, it's a very easy pick up, put back down kind of read. Like, you can definitely take it in increments. So 3.54 is about what I'm going to give it.
I am going to give it a 4 because I think for most people, if you're a fan of the series, you're going to want to read the book and finish it, and you're going to be interested in it, and you're going to keep picking it back up. And if you are used to her writing and enjoy it, easy read for most people. And here comes the caveat, Casey.
Sorry. I'm going to fully give it a 1. I did not want to read it. I hated reading it. I wish I hadn't read it. And I want my time back. So.
I am sorry. I'm fighting you a 1. That is not a 1 on a busy girl's
rating.
It's
like 560 pages. I mean,
it's not 560 pages.
Yes, it is. On Kindle, it was.
That's on Kindle.
Do I need to go find my hardcover and dig it out wherever it's at?
I am pretty sure it's like 501, and that's it.
Let me look on Kindle. Okay, 541 on Kindle.
Okay, Amazon says the printed version is 528.
Yeah. It's way too long, and I didn't think it was interesting. I would never read. I would never recommend it. I actively am telling people, I'm like, don't.
I've been telling people it's the greatest book in the series. Please read it.
Me too.
A lot more people agree with you than me, but, you know, I'm going to stand to my guns here.
I only give 1s to, like, books that, like, are fully non-busy girl friendly. So this is just shocking to me to give a 1 to that.
I legitimately was bored the entire time I read it. I didn't, was so fucking bored. Like,
I cannot believe. Okay. Anyway, all the reasons she's saying she hates this book is normally the reason she likes a book. So.
Okay. Weird disagreeing about let's the just, character okay. development.
Spoiler I like alert section, let's book. Go. Let's. There's tension.
Oh my god, this is the most, like, intense episode we've ever had.
That's why someone said, you should do Harry Potter before the new series comes out. I was like, we cannot touch that. Nope.
No,
I'm this is already
getting too
one.
Close to a sacred series. Like,
yeah, because to be fair, Harry Potter's sacred for all of us, so I feel like we'd be okay.
It is.
Yeah, I know, but then we'll get doxxed or something by someone.
You're
Casey-esque.
Throwback to last episode where Catherine got to be the hater for the first time, and I was like, haha, see how it feels. And now
one and only time Catherine will be the hater.
yeah
Casey said, bitch, that's my role, back with a vengeance.
Yeah, hold my beer.
Yeah, okay. I can do worse. Well, yeah.
Okay, spoiler alert section. I'm reading the first question. I'm like, Casey, I don't. Okay, Casey, what did you think about Snow at the beginning of the book? How did that change by the end of the book? Did it change? You, Catherine, set us up for failure with this question.
Yeah, because no, it did not change literally.
Oh my gosh.
So I want to say, I do feel like my expectations colored how I read this book. The book that I wanted to read.
She just said it's my fault.
I wouldn't say it's my fault. I would say the book I imagined was much better than this book.
No, I'm saying my fault because your expectations.
Look, Catherine admitted it's her fault she gave it 5 stars. I can admit it's my fault I gave it 3. I wanted this book to like actually start. The way I feel is that Snow is a psychopath. I feel like he barely had any emotions. He was a narcissist the whole time.
Yes.
And I think the problem with these kinds of characters is that they're incapable of change and they're incapable of empathy. And that's how I felt the whole time in the book, is that those characters can't really change or experience growth because they do not feel normal human emotions. And they're incapable of genuinely caring about people other than themselves.
Okay.
And
I agree with you.
Yeah, same.
I don't think he changes throughout the book. I think you really root for him to change, and he shows glimmers of like it could happen, but it never does. So I don't disagree with you on this. He is a psychopath.
But then the book is not about character development. You just like that's saying there's no character development.
Well, okay.
It's character driven.
Yeah, I wouldn't say because character development connotates like a development to something good, but I think he develops into something villainous. I think he starts off the book very green and very like unaware of the world, and he learns about the world throughout the book, and what he learns of the world he takes in his own psychopathic mind. So I agree he's a psychopath, and I agree that he is not able to totally change, but he doesn't realize that until the end of the book, and so I think that's what makes it interesting.
How often do you get a book where the main character is walking the line between good and evil and chooses evil in the end?
But he's literally never walking the line. He's always evil. He's a narcissist and a psychopath from page one.
Yes, but he's not always doing things for the pure intention of being evil.
I don't
he's
think
gray.
He makes...
He does.
He is not gray.
Yes, he is.
Gray. Yes, what? He's gray until the
Tell
end.
Tell me a single choice he makes in the book for the benefit of someone else.
He does care for Lucy Gray.
Yeah.
No, he
at
doesn't.
At some
he,
point.
The whole
yes,
time
he
talks about owning her. His only motivation in caring for her is that she belongs to him and is his route to success. Their love story, I personally felt, was like...
I don't think it's a love story.
So unbelievable.
I do think he cares about her.
I don't.
And for a while, not the
whole
time.
Every single time he talks about her, he's either talking about owning her or how he needs her to survive so he can go to college. That is not the same thing.
Okay, but here's the other thing. Arguably, to poke the bear, he wants to go to college so that he can save his destitute family.
Yes.
So
he wants to be
intention.
Rich again. I'm not saying he's evil for that reason. I'm saying that was still self-serving.
It is, but he's trying to keep
his grandma
from being homeless.
And the entire time he worries about his image and his family's image.
I'm sorry,
he's not worried, oh my God, I can't like stand the thought of like my grandmother like dying. He's like, I cannot believe people will know that we have fallen from grace. Like,
but think about in these circumstances, the capital is all about wealth and the idea of wealth. So
a lot of the characters around him don't think like that at all.
Most of them do.
His sister doesn't.
Well, that's his cousin and
his cousin, whatever.
Also, did you catch his cousin helps Katniss in the trilogy?
I did think, I wasn't for sure because I could never quite.
She's the one that hides them in her basement.
Yeah.
Who like looks like a cat.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Even she is trying to help them stay within power and status by selling herself and to prostitution and through her job and stuff like that. So it is very much so an important status symbol for their family. And that is how he thinks he can help his family. So I don't totally agree with your assessment of that situation, of that's just a bad thing to be.
Agree to disagree. Alone. Next question.
I want to say, I don't think that alone makes him evil. I'm saying that was also self-serving.
Okay, but most of the capital is self-serving. That's the whole idea of the capital.
I think the point of it is the string of choices he makes and are also fascinating.
I just thought it was really predictable. He didn't make any choices that surprised me.
Well, it's predictable because you're nobody ends up being.
But all the choices along the way were predictable. His betrayal of Sejanus or Sejanus, whatever his name is, like his betrayal of Lucy Gray, his, climbing the ranks in the peacekeeper. Like there's just nothing in it that ever surprised
but
me.
But he shoots the mayor's daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah, to Lucy save Gray. Himself. No, it was also not surprising.
Yes, there is a 50-50 there where he's for himself and also to save Lucy Gray. But also the Sejanus thing, he gets very sick and ill for what he did to Sejanus.
He cries for like 10 minutes and then is like, yeah, but he deserved it.
Okay. The part Casey actually likes, the killing.
Jesus.
Well, what did you think of the 10th Hunger Games? Mind you, we are in the original trilogy is the 74th and 75th Hunger Games. So we are way back in time and they are kind of painted as like they just throw kids in an abandoned old sports arena with some knives and are like, good luck. Like
it's put them very, in a zoo to be.
Yeah.
Caged.
It's very different than the like grand event of the trilogy, which we find out is largely thanks to Snow. But what do you think of the OG Hunger Games? And
I want to say something before Casey says it, because I want her opinion on this. I thought this was the best part of the book of setting up how the Hunger Games became the Hunger Games from the 10th to the 74th. Because I thought it was very interesting seeing Snow's mind of how he's like, oh, we could improve upon that with bedding, with food, with let's give them better housing. Let's treat them like capital citizens, quote unquote.
Let's and have like promote them. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was super fascinating. That was honestly my favorite part of the book. Cause I was like, oh, this really shows the intricacies of Snow's mind before he becomes president. And then what he implements during his presidency to make it what it becomes in the
And
later
he's like a senior in high school, basically.
Yeah.
Which is so sick.
I will say, I did like this. Like, I think I said in the beginning, the part that I liked in this book is getting to see how this era, like, became Katniss's era. And I did like that, like, the Hunger Games kind of starts out as this, like, weird ramshackle event. And, like, it grows. And I thought that was really interesting. This is another thing I can't believe I'm saying is I actually wish this book had been dual perspective. And I really wish we had gotten Lucy Gray's perspective in this book. I think it would have balanced out some of the monotony and pessimism that I personally felt like got exhausting in Corio's perspective. And this part of the book really strained me because I felt like it just took all of the tension and excitement out of the Hunger Games to only have the perspective of someone who was completely safe the whole time. So I think if Lucy's perspective had been in this book, I would have liked it a lot more.
I agree a little bit, like especially during the Hunger Games. I don't necessarily think we should have gotten her perspective after the Hunger Games, the post-Hunger Games period, because I just think it makes it more complex, that whole relationship. But I do agree that I think we'd get the taste of the Katniss Hunger Games, PETA Hunger Games situation, where I think that would have been interesting. But I feel like we did get that in the original trilogy. So that's why this is like a little bit different. I feel like
she has done us a great service by writing something different.
I didn't need it to be just, I mean, I think because the perspective is Snow, it was going to be different no matter what. But I mean, I've already said it. I don't want to beat the dead horse. I think it's really boring to watch someone watch something. It just had no interest or stakes. Like, I know he wasn't going to be able to go to college if she died, but obviously there would have been no book if she had died. And so it just sort of like, it was just really, really long. And I actually think it should have been a smaller part of the book.
I think the point was you learn how the games develop and why they develop.
For 300 pages, the whole thing we need to learn is like, it's 10 kids and no one watches and they're just in this abandoned stadium. And like, Corio has ideas. Like, I don't think we needed to do that for 300 pages. I think they should have made the mentorship part where he can actually talk to her longer, because that was a little more interesting.
Well, that's where I don't necessarily agree. Like, I think her perspective would be interesting in the games, but like before and after, I don't know, because before she's just sitting in a cage. And
yeah, I agree with you, but I just felt like that part kind of lacked. Like, that was the part of the book that like I liked seeing how the Hunger Games developed, but like as the days drug on and on, I was just like, felt like it was too long.
I think that's kind of the point you're supposed to feel though, so that you realize, to be bored. Yeah, because the people weren't watching it, they were bored.
It's not the spectacle. So these kids
were just sacrifices. They were not a spectacle, as Catherine was just saying. Like, I think that's the whole point, is you get the feel that like this was just a punishment with no real teeth to it. And then Corio takes it and makes it what it is.
I mean, my point is the same. I think you can do that in 100 pages. I just felt like that part was really long.
I think we can agree to disagree there, where I'm halfway in between y'all, which is normally the situation, where it is a long book. And I feel like we could have cut down parts 1 and 2 a little bit.
And like I said, I'm reading this, I'm recording this like 3.5 years after I've read this.
So part 3 is the shortest of the parts, and that's in District 12. And parts 1 and 2 are in the Capitol. And so that's quite a lot of exposition and quite a lot of setup for all of the stuff that goes down. So I do sort of agree with Casey that it definitely could have been shorter, but I don't necessarily agree that 100 pages would have done it justice. So I'm in the middle there.
So here's a question I have for Casey. Do you think, so we kind of have a new generation as this movie's coming out. If today's teens were picking up the series, but started with the prequel and did not read the trilogy first, or say they haven't seen the movies, you know, like they are starting with this book, do you think you would have liked it more starting with this book and then moving into the trilogy? Or do you think, I feel like I like it more because I read the trilogy first, but do you think you would like it more if you were reading this first?
I honestly don't know. Because I think that a lot of the things I found interesting in this book, I found them interesting because I had already read the trilogy. So I don't know how I would have felt about this book if I read it first. And I do think I would have read the trilogy totally differently if I had read this book first. So I'm honestly not sure which one like I would have liked better.
That's fair. And we'll never know, because you can't unread books. So
yeah, you cannot. But I agree with you, Caitlin, if that's not already obvious.
Okay. We find out that Snow's dad basically helped create the Hunger Games on accident. Well, not on accident. He made project. Another kid do it on accident, sort of. Anyway, it's in his blood. What do you think about that?
I thought it was super interesting to talk about, because it really dehumanizes the Capitol a lot. Because Snow's dad submits a school assignment to Dr. Gall, who is just like the evil mad scientist, let's be real. Submits a school assignment from Highbottom, Dean Highbottom, that is the creation of the Hunger Games during the war. And then that gets used to create the Hunger Games. And now Snow comes in and submits these assignments and mentors for grade for class. And it's so dehumanizing other people's experience and dehumanizing the Hunger Games and creating this kind of like survival instinct free for all that has no human attachment to it because you made it for a grade and you made it for a school assignment. And I thought that was very fascinating.
Which, side note, the assignment is what's the worst way you can think of to punish someone?
Yeah.
Already step one in dehumanizing.
Yeah, for sure. Dr. Gall is the main force throughout this that creates the thought process for all these things. She didn't necessarily have the wherewithal to create these things, but utilizes war and utilizes the capital mindset to put them in a headset to mindset to create these things. So she knows how to manipulate people to get the worst out of them and definitely thinks the worst of humankind. So I thought that was really an interesting anecdote.
So similar veins, talking about school assignments. So in the Hunger Games trilogy, the mentors are former victors from the district. But this is the first ever games with mentors, and they are school children who are guiding their peers, like kids the same age as them, through the Hunger Games. What'd you think about that? Because that is one heck of a school assignment, just like the other one.
I was interested in this part because I like seeing them interact with each other. I do think I'm like, what the fuck were they thinking? Like making your richy rich school kids look after these like kids who are going to die. I was like, well, that is one way to graduate, I guess.
It's like the baby you take home, but yeah. Instead it is a real human and they will die.
You have to watch this person that you quote unquote mentor die. Yeah, I thought it was kind of weird that they called it a mentorship because I was like, what could these children possibly offer them? But I was like, it was a good enough setup to make them interact, I guess.
Well, and that tells you how much they really do not give a shit about the Hunger Games at this point. Is they are letting children run them.
Let's let these fucking kids do it. I was like,
fresh ideas, kids.
Terrible that they're letting kids like do this to kids, but also like the adults don't care enough about this punishment. So that's why it's so boring. No one cares.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you think of Tigress? As you guys mentioned earlier, she ends up helping Katniss and the rebels hide, which obviously means a lot changed for her from book to book.
Snow lands on top, but only for the women, apparently.
And only over a very fucking long period of time.
For like 70 years.
She's in her 80s or something like that in that movie and book.
Yeah. I liked Tigress. I thought that she was actually like pretty complicated and was like actually a good person and was kind of stuck a lot, I think, between like capital values and doing the right thing. And she had to sacrifice a lot to keep the family together of like her personal worth. So like I thought that she added to the book a lot.
Yeah, I agree. I wish there was more of her. She was kind of not necessarily his foil, but sort of. It was like two people in the same situation and they do things very differently to survive them. And so I think that made her super interesting as being his like alternate path he could have taken. And I would have liked more of her because she was a good little slap on the face every once in a while. Like, dude, grow up. There's worse things.
Yeah.
I thought as a character, she was super interesting because she's not in it for very long. And it's insinuated through Snow's point of view that she is kind of not kind of the breadwinner, but also the reason why that they even managed to stay in their position that they are. And he doesn't even want to admit that his cousin sold herself to gain money during the war and post-war period. And I really wish, not necessarily we got her perspective, but also like I wish we delved into her a little bit more, because she is basically the reason why snow lands on top. Like, that's their whole motto. She is the reason why Coriolanus Snow could succeed, because she made sure that they continue to keep their wealth and status despite debasing herself and despite basically selling her body and selling her soul to fund their lavish lifestyle. So she sees the worst of the capital and he does not, and he doesn't even want to acknowledge it.
And what's most interesting is, despite her sort of being part of the reason he can rise to power, she gets almost a redemption arc, even though it's like not like she needed redemption. She was just trying to help her family. But like, she's the reason for his downfall, too. So his rise mm-hmm. and his downfall, when you read the trilogy, you're like, oh, snap.
Yeah.
So she does end up doing what's right in the end.
Yes. So. Wonderful little Easter egg.
Oh, she's creepy as hell in the movie, though. Okay.
Yeah, she's yeah. she's turned her mutilated herself into a tiger.
Yeah.
Capital, and added whiskers to
capital
her.
Capital shit. Yeah.
The capital
to
shit
to hide that
weird.
She's 100 years old.
Yeah.
Jesus.
So, would you rather have wrinkles or be a tiger?
Okay, if she was selling herself during the war, that was 10 years before this book took place.
Gross. So yes. Okay. So now we're up to the part about the songs. So my favorite Easter egg in the whole thing was that Lucy Gray wrote the hanging tree.
Oh, that's so good.
Loved that. I was like, fucking finally the origin of the song, and it's so good. And it just like adds all this stuff to the trilogy about like why Snow hated Katniss and hated that song so much. So I did love that. The other songs, I was like, they're fine. Take them or leave them.
I saw what she was doing with the songs. And I did love the hanging tree Easter egg. Like, oh, so perfect. But, and how it kind of also like brings in the Mockingjays and stuff. But I'm one of those, like, if I can't hear it in my head, I'm not coming up with a tune. That was just a poem in a book to me.
Yep.
I could sing the hanging tree one because, you know, the movie, but like, what was it before the movie gave it a tune? You know, like when there are songs and books, I'm just like, what am I supposed to do with this?
No, I 100% agree. I've never been a poetry girly, and I definitely appreciated that the Hunger Games trilogy gave me some reference for the Meadow Song and the hanging mm-hmm. tree. So I could sing it in my head as I was reading it. But I did love that Easter egg that essentially it really, really connects Katniss to Lucy Gray, because it means that, because Lucy Gray only sang it in public once, and it was at a peacekeeper's birthday party. So it literally, Katniss could only be related to someone of the Covey. So mm-hmm. the Covey is the band that Lucy Gray is in. So basically Katniss is one of the Covey's great-grandchildren or grandchildren.
She's a descendant of gypsies.
Yeah, mm-hmm. she's a descendant of song
and
folk.
Maybe this is like skipping ahead, but could potentially be Lucy Gray's descendant.
I don't totally believe that one. I think she's a descendant of Maud Ivory, the little cousin. So yes, in theory, that would be the same family tree. I don't think Lucy Gray came back to District 12.
Yeah.
But there are theories out there that explore.
Right.
That.
Like, we don't get that answer. So like,
right.
Couldn't be. I think your Maud theory is probably more practical.
Mm-hmm.
But some of it, I want it to be like her granddaughter and be like, F you, Snow.
Yeah. That'd be great, though. That'd be great.
Because that's the whole time I was like, okay, so how does Lucy Gray connect to Katniss? And I kind of came down in the same place as you did, Catherine, because I just like assumed in my heart, and what I want for Lucy Gray is that she escaped to District 13 and was able to like have the freedom that she wanted.
Or just she just became a wilderness lady, lived in the wilderness.
A true gypsy.
True. Okay, so now we have a very depressing question. Do you think Dr. Gall's theory about humanity is correct, which is basically without order and policing and violence, like chaos will erupt and humans won't be kept in check unless they experience fear and this like oppressive power above them? Especially when you juxtapose that with Lucy Gray, who is like Lucy Gray thinks that people are naturally good. And that the world sometimes makes them bad, but that, we have to fight to like stay good.
See, this is where I find the book super interesting, is all these moral questions it brings up, but also are things that I don't want to think about in my head. Like, I love reading other people's thoughts on them and how it affects the storyline, and I'm like, oh dear, that is dark.
As a
Right.
so as a political science major graduate degree person, I had so many classes about social contracts and like exactly what Snow is talking about, where it's like, what's the social contract? The idea of anarchy versus democracy versus any sort of governmental body. And do you need some sort of policing force in order to prevent humanity from devolving, essentially? Like, that was a lot of my classes was talking about those theories. So I found it really interesting about, because Dr. Gall takes it to an absolute extreme, but there's parts of her where she is correct in some ways, where it's like, if you don't have some sort of law or some sort of set of morals, humanity technically would devolve into a very hunter-gatherer, very my stuff is my stuff, and I will kill you if you take my stuff. Like, there's a lot of theories behind this. I don't necessarily subscribe to any of them, but she is right in some aspects, but she takes it to an extreme. And then Lucy Gray takes it where it's like, people are naturally good, but they're walking on a tightrope where any point they can turn evil or turn bad, or they have to fight to stay on the good side. So I thought it was very interesting because they're completely polar opposites, but they take aspects that I believe in. So it's like, I'm in the middle.
Fellow poli-sci major here. I did not do a lot of social contracting. I did a lot of how government functioning. But I think it also, you can draw an anthropology in this, like the bigger the group of people, the more likely chaos will reign kind of stuff. Like this is an argument as old as time, and makes you think of people like Hitler and what they were doing over there, experimenting on people. Like, there will always be people who have these ideas, like Dr. Gall, and who will seek to bring order. And I think Lucy's question is, does it need order to begin with? Sort of like, do you have to have people like this imposing something like this? I don't know. I can't even see, it's going too fast in my head. I can't even speak it out loud. It's a very deep portion of the book.
It is. And I did not major in poli-sci, but I actually think my English major comes in handy here. I feel like this is essentially one of the like big questions that Lord of the Flies was trying to answer. But I mean, like you, Catherine, I think it's somewhere in the middle. Like, I don't really think people are naturally good, but I also don't think they're naturally evil. Like, they're kind of just naturally people. And I do think that you have to have some sort of form of justice, just because if people all live together and someone does something bad about someone else and there's no consequences, then yeah, then you can't live in a society. Does the police state have to run everything and murder children every year? Obviously, no. But like, I do think most people don't want to hurt others, but I think the society they're raised in heavily influences how they define what hurting others means. And so, I mean, that's kind of how we got slavery and the Holocaust, is like what is right and wrong is heavily influenced by how you grew up and what's normalized for you. But I think at the end of the day, people do want to do the right thing, at least most of the time, and the right thing changes. So,
So the interesting thing is Lucy Gray ends up killing one, if not more, people.
yeah, but we see that as a moral not a moral right, but something that she that was not
preservation.
Wrong.
And now you're talking about self-preservation versus morality. There are just a lot of trolley problems in this book.
It's definitely a conundrum, and I think that was the point Suzanne Collins set out to write about when she started The Hunger Games, because she looked at, I believe it was a war documentary, and it was talking about future wars and also just talking about past wars, and she took a lot of history, and it took a lot of what she thought about the future of history happened a certain way. And she wrote The Hunger Games. So I know for a fact she was watching a documentary about war, and that's what inspired The Hunger Games. So it makes sense for us to be debating and discussing about policing and police state. And like when you're talking about Hitler, when you're talking about like other dictatorships and governments, it makes sense that this book talks about those themes if that's what she was taking from when she was writing this universe.
Generational reparations, like,
yeah,
lots of that.
Okay. So very
on. We hope you had your coffee before listening to this episode.
I know, seriously, or like a shot of vodka, it's fine. So going on to a little bit not even lighter but just different, dark
swerve.
Lucy Gray does end up winning the Hunger Games, no thanks to Snow's involvement and keeping her alive essentially by cheating. He gets sent to District 12 to peacekeep. Well, he actually gets sent to peacekeep. He chooses to go to District 12 because he's quote unquote in love with Lucy Gray. I put it in quotes because I doubt Casey thinks that he was ever in love with her. But in the end, they have very diametrically opposed viewpoints when it comes to the world and when it comes to the Capitol. And they run away together for a brief period of time. Well, she goes
very
to pick,
brief,
very brief. Like within an hour, he decides this is not for me, which
he
I
goes,
thought was insolent.
Trees.
Yeah, it was so stupid. She goes to go pick Katniss, which I thought that was a cute little wink, wink, hint, hint. And he goes to try and find her. And there's a snake in the orange scarf that he gives her. And he gets bit and he starts hallucinating, being paranoid. He thinks, but the doctor says it wasn't a venomous snake. Do you think Lucy Gray tried to kill Snow, or was it a happy coincidence?
I think she knew it wasn't poisonous and wanted to see what he would do.
I think very similarly, I think she was becoming aware that Snow was not the person he had presented himself as and wanted to escape from him, and knew the snake wasn't poisonous, but also knew that the snake could buy her some more time. So I feel like it was like a fail safe that she did to try and like get away from him. But I also think that she knew he wasn't going to die.
Yeah, I think she shows her cards a bit when they're having that conversation. And she's just like, I've had too many deaths on my conscience. And he says, yeah, three is enough for me. But she obviously was like, okay, so who's the third? Also, he could have come up with any excuse in the fucking book. He
I
could
was
have
like, why don't you just say, I blame myself for Sejanus or
Sejanus.
Like,
I blame myself because I felt like I could have prevented him from committing treason, or I feel responsible because I gave the poison to you that killed Bobbin. Like, he could have come up with any excuse in the book where he could just be like, I feel somewhat responsible because I am a Kandergear in the death of someone else. He had so many excuses, but instead he's just like, oh, it's the death of my old personality. I'm like, yeah, any girl knows that that's bullshit. And that's when I know that she was just like, you're sketchy.
And we're out. And
we're out. So I totally think that, I mean, like Maude Ivory says, like, snakes are her best friend. She knows what she's doing. And so she was buying herself time. She strategically put the orange scarf down and she bolted and ran and made sure that she never saw Coriolanus Snow ever again.
Side note, Sejanus. Janus was the Greek god that had like two faces. I just clever naming.
He was very good at lying, despite right. not being a good liar, was very good at lying.
Super nerdy of me when you brought up him getting killed. I thought about that.
When you think of Arachne Crane, Arachne mm-hmm. in the Greek myth is cursed to become a spider, and Arachne Crane gets killed first in the Hunger Games as a mentor.
Yeah, there's a lot of clever naming. And you see some of those names pop back up in the series, like the surnames. Mm-hmm. They pop back up in the trilogy. And you're like, Anyway, back to the question you were actually asking. After he's bitten by the snake, he goes on this rampage and starts shooting around into the woods, trying to shoot Lucy Gray, the girl he supposedly loves. Did she die? What happened?
I say she didn't die. Obviously, I'm just going to be romantic about it. And like, that's my choice. But I love her like using the hanging tree lyric to escape and like that like plan. Like, this is the scene in the book that I was like, this is immaculate. And so I choose to believe that she escaped, made it to District 13, was a founder of District 13, and that she got away from him and lived her life. So
I think she got away. I do not think she went to District 13. I do not picture Lucy Gray as someone who could live underground in a bunker for years and years.
Well, I mean, like early District 13 when they're all like campers and whatever.
I think what we don't realize is there are probably a lot more people than you think living out in the wilderness. And that's what I like to imagine for her. It's just wild, wild Lucy Gray out there in her rainbow skirt doing her gypsy thing.
Well, I think this is where the song lyrics really help, mm-hmm. where the Ballad of Lucy Gray is a song in which the daughter gets lost in the snow and the parents go to find her and then the tracks suddenly stop. Mm-hmm. And there's this whole thing that she became a ghost or she became a bird or where did she go? And I think that's very much, it's definitely foreshadowing. And I think she didn't end up in District 13, but I don't think she was killed by snow. And here's the hint that I definitely think shows it. He hallucinates her in the rainbow dress that she was wearing in the Hunger Games during that scene. So it wasn't her because she wasn't wearing that during that issue when he was like, I saw her, so I shot kind of thing. Because she wasn't wearing that when she was out in the woods with him. They talk about this free men group up north. I don't think District 13 is near there. So I think she just kind of joins another gypsy camp and just becomes one with the people that she was originally supposed to be with. I'm just sad the Covey couldn't join her. I'm assuming they were trapped in District 12 and obviously their instruments were taken away because music is power, which I totally believe because music is storytelling and storytelling in oral tradition is very powerful of learning a culture and learning a history. So I thought that was interesting at the end of the book when Snow mentioned that. And then I loved the Mockingjays and how much he hated them. And she utilized that to get away. Like, that was so fun. Because I was just like, why do you hate birds? Like, you're so annoying. Why do you hate birds?
I like to think that Lucy Gray became the kind of thing she would sing about, you know? Just a myth out there living in the wild.
Did y'all listen to the Olivia Rodrigo song for this movie, Catch Me Now?
No.
Did not.
Okay. Well, then we can't discuss it, but it's really good. I recommend it because it's like, you can't catch me now. And it's like all about like, you can't touch me. I'm in the trees. I'm in the leaves. Like, you can't catch me. It's really good. Like, I think she did a good job writing for this storyline of Lucy disappearing.
I do think another Easter egg that kind of goes into this whole what happened to Lucy Gray thing is the roses. Like, his grandma grows the roses throughout this whole book, and they're kind of a symbol of his attempt to, like, be hoity-toity. And he then gifts them to, like, Katniss as a threat later on and uses them to cover poison. And, like, I don't know. It's really interesting how some of that, like, the hanging tree and, like, what happened to Lucy Gray all kind of, like, adds to the lore that is the trilogy, which is interesting to me. I love books with Easter eggs.
Me too.
Absolutely.
Okay. I already know the answer to this from Casey, but I want to hear from Caitlin as well. And Casey, you can speak as well, but whatever.
I don't have to. Have a moment.
Did Snow truly love Lucy Gray? It's a point of contention on TikTok and on Book Talk, I've noticed, especially with the movie coming out. And my add-on to that, did she truly love him?
I think I'll surprise you with my answer, maybe. No and no. I think to Lucy Gray, he was a means to an end. I feel like she was very cunning, and she was someone who was already used to doing what she had to do to survive. And I think she was doing what she had to do to survive. Bummer that he was, like, this cute capital boy, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I think Snow is one of those people who, and you see it today still, often in domestic violence situations, that people mistake possession of something for loving something. And I think he wanted to possess Lucy Gray. I don't think he knew how to actually love her. So I don't think it was love, no.
It was all. I completely agree with that assessment, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, Catherine. I don't know if that's what you want to hear.
No, I actually agree. I will add a caveat that I think he thought he loved her.
Right. He confuses possession for love.
Yes, and I think that's the issue with the capital, because they are so
capitalistic. About,
they're very capitalistic, and they're very interested in possessions, and possessions show prosperity and wealth and status. And he very much so throughout the entire book is trying to paint Lucy Gray as this capital darling, as this, she doesn't deserve to be district. She's totally capital. Like, I think, because even if you see him in the Hunger Games books where he says, the thing that you love most will destroy you, or something along those lines. And I think when he's talking to Katniss about that, he is thinking of Lucy Gray. So I don't think in the actual sense of love, did he love her? But I think he thinks he loved her, and he definitely is upset about what she did to him. And he totally thinks that she destroyed his chance at love. And he even says at the end of the book, I'm going to find a woman who I can't ever possibly love, who can never hurt me or destroy me. And that's who I'm going to marry, because he knows that love is a very powerful thing, much like hope.
And this, my friends, is how you become a serial killer.
Because I think part of how you know he never loves her is that he, even before he wanted to kill her, he was going to abandon her. So,
yeah.
That's not very genuine now, is it? He's mostly mad that she got away.
Possession. Yep.
100%.
Not a love story.
And I think she loved Billy. What was his name? Billy?
Tobe or something?
Yeah. The guy that dated the mayor's daughter while dating her and got her in the Hunger Games. I think she loved him and realized that that was a lot. And I don't think you can truly love someone in a situation like she was put into. Yeah. The power dynamics are just too effed up to actually truly develop a consensual and loving relationship. So I think she was definitely using him to get ahead to make sure she could stay alive. So fair enough.
She was a free spirit. No one can tame her.
Absolutely. An artist. Okay. Well, I think that's our discussion. I want to say one of my friends right before I got on here told me she loves it when we argue. So I feel like we definitely delivered.
Oh, I know I'm going to get some comments after this episode from people who I see on the regular. They're going to be like, man, you and Casey, are you still friends?
Oh, my God.
It wasn't all that
bad. I feel like
we
were. It wasn't. We've gotten a lot more heated in other episodes.
Yeah, we have.
It was a little dicey at the beginning, but it's never, never hate to the other person, just disagreement on ideas. And I feel like by the end, we are all pretty much on the same page for most of the book. So,
yeah.
Yes.
How much we liked the time we spent on the book is where we differ. So don't worry, we're all friends. It's okay.
Yeah. And now this segues perfectly into our usual disclaimer, which is we love disagreement and these are just our opinions and we want you to have your own and we want you to tell us about them. So
someone provoke Catherine. Come on.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. We need to get a rise out of this girl. Like
she's looking at us like, no,
I give me a Colleen Hoover book and you'll get a rise out of me. But no way are you guys reading
this. The problem
those.
Is that we all agree. So we're all screaming in agreement.
I have had several people tell me I should give her another chance recently.
Nope. I've given
no.
her two.
Yeah. No.
Anyway, hit us up at Busy Girls Pod. Wait, we needn't do book recommendations.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit.
Do you have a book recommendation? I don't know if I do.
I'm like,
you asked the question.
Well, because we always ask the question. Read Gideon the Ninth.
What?
Really similar, using someone for an ends to a means vibes in a weird scenario. But
it's like they are nothing alike, but sure.
With lesbian necromancers in space.
You know what? I'm gonna have a bit of a weird recommendation, but I'm gonna recommend Medusa's Sisters because I think that's a book where I felt like the characters were super complicated and the messages are super deep, and so I think that gave me more of like what I wanted.
I'm gonna be basic. I'm going to recommend Divergent.
Oh, I thought you were going to say The Hunger Games.
No, that's okay.
I'm going to be basic.
Canceled.
No, I'm not getting canceled like that. I'm just going to recommend Divergent because I feel like that was the book series that inspired me after The Hunger Games and it came out around the same time. I don't know. I just think that that's the most similar.
I just thought of a way better recommendation.
Ooh.
So I loved the Atlas.
You already made
six.
Yours. Sorry.
Ah. Wow. That's how you know she's mad. Atlas Six is a lot more similar in like theme to this. And it's kind of very
actually,
much.
Yes. You got where I was going with Gideon the Ninth, but found an actual good.
That's a good
trials,
one.
Morally ambiguous people.
Yeah. Questions of humanity and morality and what's worth, you know.
You did a better job of getting there than I did, so
I like that a lot.
I will allow.
Yeah, it took me a minute, but I found one. Okay. So that's everything. Please give us 5 stars, rate and review, hit us up, and I think that's it.
Well, yeah, thank you guys for listening, and with that, I'm Catherine.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Casey. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.